printed half of the provinces, no?
No, I never printed it out.
Neither of you have one?
Oh, the previous one? Or?
The last one.
The last
this
one?
Is the last.
Yes.
We have only one copy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot. I was in a hurry, I didn't get to print out one. Let's see. Okay, so let's remind ourselves. So, Fourier transform. So, we should first show that the 2-point correlation function is related to the power spectrum.
Okay, so who's going to do that?
Well, I can do that. I'll figure out that one.
Okay.
Why
don't
you
get
started?
Yeah. Well, if you get started with the easier ones and see how far it can go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the difference between this problem set and all the previous ones is that these are the things that my actually quantum calculators I do are actually using my own research. And I still wanted to do it. So it's closer to the actual reason. So yeah.
Okay. So starting out and the definition for pk using it at the value where k equals k prime, pk just dropping factors of 2π as they're just part of the Fourier transforms. Just where k equals k prime is otherwise the delta cancels out, and then the expectation value of this is simply now, taking the inverse Fourier transform of pk, we sort it over this. And I love the Fourier transforms. The Fourier transform of a multiplication of functions is the convolution of those functions, right? The convolution of the inverse transforms.
Actually, before you go on, can I ask you something? Yeah. So you are both familiar with the Dirac delta function, right? I mean,
yeah, I just didn't recognize it in that context because I was expecting the other delta function.
Yeah, that too many deltas, sorry, yeah. But you have already seen it in previous books. Yeah. Right, have you seen it? In quantum mechanics, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, and now the inverse Fourier transform of delta k is simply delta x as was originally defined. So this gives, and you know, we can use whatever variable we want here. So I'll just put in r for sake of the future of the problem. So this is equal to delta of r involved with delta star of negative r, the Fourier transform of the complex conjugate is negative, and we can drop the star here as delta is real for all points, and it's defined as the overdensity, which doesn't have any imaginary component. And now, expressing this conjugation as an integral integrating over x gives us that integral, which we can identify as simply being the expectation value of delta x times delta x plus r.
Wow, so good. So that's basically correct. There are a few steps that I wouldn't have taken. I mean, for example, there were delta functions there. And I guess if you have a finite volume, so for example, what's missing between the last result and the one before the last is that there you have an x integral. And to get the average, you have to divide by the volume, right? Or length. So that's, for example, what's missing.
Right.
And that's basic. That's why the other was a delta function to begin with. So that's really the difference. You could. So people define power and spectrum in different ways, which are equivalent actually. Sometimes there are factors of 2 pi which are missing in some definitions. But the definition that I gave you, which is, I think in my view, it's the most consistent, even these are vectors, is this product is 2 pi delta q k minus k prime times p of k. Now, of course, this shows that this vanishes on this k plus k prime. But it says it diverges with k plus k prime because delta is infinite when its argument is zero.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be a problem if... So one rule of thumb is that in a finite space, this is not really infinite. This goes something like goes as 1/volume. Because, so remember where this comes from. So that doing all the Fourier transform, the guideline, and what we could have used in basically getting from here to here, for example, is that this is equal to e3x exponential of ik minus k prime dot x, right? So this is not hard to see where this comes from. If k and k prime are not the same, this is an oscillatory function. If you integrate it over infinite volume, then the positives and negatives cancel each other, so becomes zero. If they are not the same, if they are exactly the same, then this becomes infinite. Hence, this guy is infinite, because if k minus k prime is zero, this is one, so this is just the whole volume of the space. And, sorry, I guess what I should have said is this is volume, not inverse volume. So if you have a finite volume of the space, and of course in every situation, you never have... In no situation you have infinite volume, you always have a finite volume to work with. This becomes the total volume of a space if k is exactly equal to k prime. So this doesn't go actually to infinity in any finite volume of a space, it becomes a finite number. So in the ideal case where b is infinite, this what you have here, this delta function, is basically zero everywhere, and zero, and it becomes infinite at zero, and it's again zero, so as a function of k minus k prime. But then in any real situation, instead of delta function, which is an idealistic case, you have something that is almost zero everywhere, around zero goes to some large number, which is around, its maximum is around the volume of the space. And it turns out that this size is something like 1/ length of your box, 1/ into the one there. And of course, this is This is the fact that if you have a finite flux, your modes are discrete, right? So you learn from quantum mechanics, so you're very, you have discrete spectrum of wave numbers. So really what happens in a finite space is that you're really replacing this continuous delta function by Kronecker, which is a Dirac delta function, by Kronecker delta function, with this volume pre-factor. So this is approximately V delta of K and K prime, basically. Where this guy becomes 1, then these two are the same as 0. So that's where all these volume factors come in at the end of the day. But if you don't have finite volume, or for mathematical simplicity, this is actually the full formula. And the difference between this and what you had above is just the volume factor, really. So let's see where that volume fits in. So this was... Okay, so delta k times delta k prime is volume times p of k. And so I guess this is volume times, instead of volume, you have a volume times this. I believe. So does this make sense now? Yeah. So Fourier inverse of volume times P of K is this. So you can divide both sides by volume. So this becomes actual average then. So then basically the Fourier transform of P of K, the Fourier transform inverse of P of K. This becomes this because there is a I guess this is a total integral P2S. And then you're dividing by volume on both sides. So that's really the difference. And so, Mina, do you have a similar derivation? Or?
No, actually. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Is the integral of d3k prime times the exponential times the delta function or delta Dirac function,
mm-hmm.
is it going to be the whole integral of 1? Because of like this all over here.
This multiplied by the delta function?
Yeah.
Well, that there isn't that the delta function?
This is the definition of, yeah, so above, not quite the definition, but this is delta function itself. Of course, the other property of delta function is that when you integrate over it, it's 1. So this is, if you want to work with delta function, two things have to happen. One is one this, and the other is the definition of delta function. Delta 3, say, x times x prime. This is 1. Of course, if this is in a volume where, say, x can become equal to x prime. So let's say, if x prime, if this is this volume of B, if this integral is over volume B, and x prime is part of the volume B. If it's not part of that volume, then this is 0. So this is delta function is 0 everywhere, except for where it's already matched. So these are two different things. So what Brian derived was basically a Fourier transform of both sides of this, I guess. Is that right? So if you just take this definition.
Yeah. Yeah, what we want to show in the end is that the Fourier or inverse Fourier transform of P of K is expectation value of delta x times delta x plus r.
I did something different, but I used something over there to show the two-point correlation function is equal to that integral. I'm not sure if that's true.
Okay, so why don't you write down
what
you've
done?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure. So I use the fact that we have, as you said, expectation I use the fact that I'm not sure if that's right.
Wait, where did you get this integral here?
Oh, it was just based on what we have in the definition of the
Fourier transform. Yeah, that's
just the definition of the Fourier transform.
Well, I guess it's inverse of this.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the way you combine them into one.
Well, no, but she hasn't combined them. What? So she just multiplied two integrals.
Uh-huh. So, I wasn't sure about that.
But let's make sure. So that first line or the middle line. So is there something that
In general, the multiplication of two integrals is not the integration of the multiplication, or integral of the multiplication.
I think it is. It's integral is a sum, right? But I mean, okay, so maybe if you depend on what exactly you're doing. So the integral is a sum. So if you have two sums and then you multiply them, then it's basically the sum of the product of all the terms in those sums, right? So.
Yeah, I think I can give an example where this doesn't work. Actually.
Okay, so I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you have something like this and something like this, then this is the same as sum over I and j of ai times bj. So this is, of course, a two-dimensional integral. These are not dimensional.
Okay, it's two-dimensional.
Yeah, so this is a two-dimensional integral.
Right, okay, then that works. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so good.
So you substitute for that over here,
mm-hmm.
And then everything is going to work out. I was just wasn't sure about that.
Absolutely. No, this is always correct, because. But for, I guess what I wrote down here was a special case where there is no prefactor. You could imagine there is some f of x here, and this becomes just f of x prime. So there. Delta function vanishes except for where k equals k prime, where that exponential becomes 1, and the integral over the delta function is 1, so exactly that's 1. Okay, so that gives
then it
gives
a
perfect. Good. So so this is the derivation. And it becomes just a Fourier transform of the power spectrum of the 2-point correlation function. Now, of course, do you understand why we call this a 2-point correlation function? Because it's basically it shows the correlation between density in two neighboring points in distance.
Right.
So this is a very important quantity. Both power spectrum and correlation function are very important quantities in cosmology and in other fields, but especially in cosmology. And it has so thank you, Mina. So it has a very important interpretation. Basically, so what this signifies is that if you should just randomly draw out points in a space and capture this correlation function for them, this would be zero. Psi of r would be zero for random distribution of particles. But if
If they are not random, if there is a correlation, this psi is the extra probability of finding a particle within distance r of another particle. So basically, the probability of finding a particle, which is, I guess, another way of really putting this, the probability of finding a particle within, say, the volume of delta 3r at distance r, it's going to be this correlation function, or sorry, it's going to be 1 plus psi on the density of mean density of r. So say if you sit at the particle, so let's say, so this is what it means, that if you sit at the particle, look at the distance r from yourself, from you, and look at the volume element at this distance, the density of particles at that point is going to be n bar, the mean density of particles held everywhere on this psi. So if you have uniform distribution, particles don't care about each other, psi is zero. That is to say, average of delta x and delta x plus r. If different points are uncorrelated with each other, this is just delta of x times delta of x plus r. And average of delta is zero, because this is over density, right? So delta is by definition, it mean is subtracted from it. So what this means is that if you're more likely to have larger density of particles close to other particles, then psi is non-vanishing. Because psi is positive. There could also be the opposite, because psi could be negative, that means particles are avoiding each other. Close to one particle, other particles don't see them. So that's another possibility. So this was very important, because basically that was the first thing, this is the most important thing that people use in cosmology and large scale structure, because they basically look at galaxies and look at, say, you draw a sphere around every galaxy and see how many other galaxies are around within that sphere, and that's related to this psi, is what this argument is told. And you can actually relate the shape of this correlation function or the power spectrum to the inflation initial conditions. So this was basically the first evidence for inflation, was the argument that the psi that you observe from galaxy distribution is related, is similar to what you expect from inflation. But there are many many steps in that argument, which I guess Mark might get to tell you about the next few weeks. But this was the first basically observational measurement that was done in modern cosmology and related to the physics of our universe. So the first step, thank you. So we have a good understanding of correlation function. Do you have any questions about correlation function? No. And I guess there was something else I wanted to tell. Yeah. So what is the next question? So sorry, I stole your piece of paper. So the next step is problem two. We want to derive sigma of m, or sigma bar, which is the variance of the mean over density within a sphere of radius r.
Almost did the same thing to try.
Well, it is similar.
It's very similar.
But can you find W of kr?
No, I couldn't find it. I just defined it as that we already have this, because like it's something, you know, a factor that we input into the delta function. Over density, we just want to smooth it out, and that's how it's defined. So I didn't derive it actually.
Well, let's see if we can derive it then. So it is similar to this derivation, but okay. So we want to start. So average density or average delta within a sphere, and find its variance in general.
Mm-hmm.
How much it can change from one sphere to another, basically. So you didn't.
I tried a lot of things, but the way I started out was, defining the variance in terms of the expectation value, variance equals expectation value of the square minus square of the expectation value, and then try a lot of algebra and calculus tricks on that to see if I could in any way work it to what we wanted in the final answer, and nothing quite worked.
Yeah, I think that maybe it's for the bit that make it. There are really two averages, so. So why don't you tell us what you did, Minara?
Oh, I didn't like the
okay.
Function.
Okay, so let me just make the question a bit clearer. I'm sorry that this wasn't.
Yeah, I would have asked you about it if the email was being more cooperative.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, what I meant was the average density within a sphere R, within a sphere of radius R, was basically the you just integrate density within that sphere. And then divide the volume of the sphere. Right. So this is a spatial average.
Right.
It might have been clear if it wasn't writing this problem that.
Right, I understood that part.
Yeah. So this is what delta R is at that. And of course, you can define it. This sphere could be anywhere, so this could be different values at different points. So, in a sense, this is a kind of a smoothing. Because at any point in the space, if you do this process, it smoothes the density within a sphere of radius R. So, I can make it a function of x, or let's say y, and this is x plus y, let's say. So that I can do this, draw this as sphere anywhere in space, at any point y. So it could be y, it could be here, it could be here. And so this could be a function, of a space like delta was, but then it's a smooth number of spheres of radius r. So at any point in the space, I can replace delta by delta smooth over radius, within radius r around that point. So, But it doesn't matter where you do it. So this y could be zero, could be an origin, could be anywhere else. So this is, you said this is what you did. Right.
Yeah. I didn't work too much from that.
Mm-hmm.
I used part of it to find the variance in that.
Mm-hmm.
To find the variance within a sphere, you.
Yeah.
It works similar.
But I mean, this is the definition. So the good. So let's we agree here. Now the next question is, what is the variance of this, which is basically average of R squared. That was really the question. That was the goal. So this is the definition of sigma of R squared. Okay. And of course, this is going to be just the square of this, 4 pi. R cubed square, and then integral of, you have two integrals, let's say x and x prime, two integration variables, d3x prime, and this y is not really important, I can put it anywhere, like, let's take it to be zero, it doesn't matter really. And I'm going to have delta of x prime. I'm not sure why I'm going that way, but anyway, you can probably twist your head a little bit. And it's x prime.
Is it exponential?
No, I've just multiplied this by itself.
Okay.
So is this what you expected or not? I just square this, because this part is a square. And here I can call x or x prime. So this is an integration variable, I can call it anything.
So I'm multiplying it by itself, so there are
right, two. Right, I see now. Okay.
Okay. Good. Now let me try to write the straight if that is. This is doesn't. Okay. So this is going to be, and this is what we just calculated as a correlation function, right? With this, basically, and we don't we established that this was the Fourier transform of the power spectrum.
Yeah, but in there, wouldn't that be only for r equals 0, or little r equals 0?
No, this is x, and this is x prime. So this is going to be the psi of x minus x prime. These aren't the same x's, right?
Wait, why aren't they the same x's?
So because this is an integration variable, right? This is an integral. So so when I multiply delta by itself, so this is the same thing as I have here. Right. So I have two sums.
Yeah, I get that. It's just in changing the expectation value of delta squared r, how do we split that up inside to one being x and one x prime?
Okay, so let's get back first. Step back for a minute. This time I'm going to make it more horizontal.
Yeah, because I tried something similar to that, but I couldn't figure out the argument for why they would be different variables with inside the expectation value.
Well, so here's the thing, that this is an integration. This is within radius r, but x is an integration variable, right?
Yeah.
So when I multiply delta r by itself, I'm really multiplying two of these guys. But then, since x is integrated over, I can call it x prime here.
Mm-hmm.
And the main point is that there are really two sums, although you may think that this should be the same. These are really... There is x is not real. It's just it's a label for sum, same as it was here. So you really have two different sums. That's why you have two different integrations.
So this only works when you're integrating over a volume.
That's true.
Yeah.
If there was no integral here, then it would be the same x as that much. But since there is an integral,
okay, that's
yeah
that's what got me.
I see. Okay.
I was assuming that you would multiply them together first and then integrate, which isn't the same.
That's not the argument because of this, basically.
Yeah.
When you have two sums, you have two labels for the two sums. Mm-hmm. Even if these are the same numbers, there are really two sums, so there are two labels. Two labels that keep track of the two sums. So when you multiply the two, there are really two labels that should be left here that are different from each other. Even if AI is the same as BI, it's a two-dimensional sum. So the average of delta R squared then is going to be just the product of these two. D3X prime, and these are both within this sphere of radius r, but then the indices, as we discussed, are different. The arguments of delta are different. Delta of x and delta of x prime. And then from the definition of correlation function, we knew this is psi of x minus x prime, right? It doesn't need to be an absolute value. So usually in cosmology, you assume isotropy, so psi is just a function of the difference between the magnitude of the difference. But it's, in general, it doesn't need to be. It can be just be different for different in different directions as well. But anyway, so it's a psi of r is the difference between x and x prime, if you want to make exact analogy here. and here, for example. Mm-hmm. And of course, the first part of the problem established, this is the Fourier transform of the power spectrum. So you have two, you end up with three integrals here, which might seem a bit daunting, but at the end of the day, they simplify. Into the I k dot x minus x prime p of k. Right. So this is the first part of the problem. Now, what simplifies now and gives us w of k is that I can take this. So the k dependencies are okay, so there's k dependence, all these have k dependencies. But there is no k dependence here. So what I can do is just take this, replace the order of these integrals. So it's integral d3k over 2 pi cubed. E of k and integral d3x. And the other interesting thing is that I can also, whatever is left, integral d3x, d3x prime times this exponential, I can decompose it into a product. I'm thinking there must have been an easier way of doing this. Yes, I didn't have to go calculate this first. I could have done this, find values right here. But we can do that later. But basically, the idea, this is that view of these are values. Same as with this guy. So this is basically the Fourier transform of a function that's 1 within a sphere of radius r and 0 outside of it. Right? Because this integral within a sphere of radius r, same as here. And of course, this would be the complex conjugate of that. It's going to be w star of kr. And the point, the reason I write it as w of k times r is the function of k, of course. But the reason I write it like this is that the only dimensional number that is here is r. So it's going to be a function of k. I guess what I can do is there are these 1 over volume factors as well. If I absorb, so I can absorb these volumes, 1 over volume factors here, right? So this is just 1 over volume squared. So this is dimensionless now. Both of these functions are dimensionless. They are functions of k, they are functions of r. Dimensional argument, the only thing I can depend on is k times r. So that's why this should be a function of k times r, same with this. These are really the same function. So that's why I wrote it as function of k times r. And we can find the formula for these. A more direct way of saying this was just to start from here and this is, I guess we could say this is a convolution, right? This is basically the same as a convolution theory. So what we are doing here, let's put it, write it down here. delta R of y plus 1 over volume times integral within radius R of dgx delta of x plus 1. But then what really, when I talk about integrating within a sphere of radius R around point y, I'm really talking about convolving with a function of, let's call it S, S of y, integrating over, yes, so I think that's of x actually. I'm doing this right. Yeah. But this function S is basically a sphere, is one within a sphere of radius R and is zero outside of it. So this is just a convolution. This is, and you can use the convolution theorem as Ryan explained to say that in the Fourier space, delta R of if I take a Fourier transform with respect to y, for example, yeah, so delta R of k, say this is k of y, so I'm taking the Fourier transform with respect to y. It's going to be some w of ky times the Fourier transform of delta of ky. Where this is just the Fourier transform. This is Fourier transform of this guy. This is Fourier transform of S divided by V. So this is just the Fourier transform of a function. That's one inside the sphere and zero outside the sphere. So basically what, and then the next step is just to calculate the square of this. I'm a bit confused about why. I want to set k y equal to 0. Do I want to set k y equal to 0?
I think that might be a way of getting the magnitude at any k from, you know, just looking at its peak. I don't know. Trying to recall, there are a lot of weird theorems on Fourier transforms.
Yes. Yeah, there sure. Yeah, okay, there is something. Yeah, okay, so I suppose this was a W function I was talking about. This is the same derivation for W, and I can, to make it dimensionless, I can put an R here in the definition of that. Yeah, so you're right. So there is something about the definition of Fourier transform that if I want delta R a square, average of delta R squared in real space, this is going to be the integral over Fourier space.
Yeah, that's Parseval's theorem, I believe.
Yes, exactly. And then from that, I can substitute ky. W squared, so it's just a square of this. W squared of ky times R, and then there is a square of this, which is a bit tricky because of all those delta functions. But I assume it should give me the power spectrum P of ky if I haven't screwed anything up. Yeah, maybe there is a volume factor somewhere. But at the end of the day, this is the final answer, which is the same as what I had here. So there are two ways of getting at it. But the idea is that, yeah, so when you're smoothing something with a So averaging within a sphere is like a smoothing a function. And a smoothing a function in real space is basically a convolution, which is Fourier transform. In Fourier space, it's like multiplying by a filter function. So a convolution in Fourier, sorry, a convolution in real space, a smoothing is a convolution in real space, just a product in Fourier space. So that's basically the idea. And that's what this W is basically a high pass, sorry, a low pass filter. It doesn't really, W, now we're gonna see that W is going to be 1 for a small k, k much smaller than 1 over r. K much larger than 1 over r equals to 0. So I guess since you, but so does this make sense? Yes? So the formula for W is just going to be W of kr is just integral of 1 over volume dgx e to the r kr from k dot x. We didn't reduce r. And so this is straightforward Fourier transform, actually. It's you can do it analytically. And I think some of you, do you know the answer? You said, yeah.
I just looked online. And
so what is it?
It's 3 over kr to the power of 3.
Uh-huh.
Times sine kr. Minus kr cosine kr.
Okay, great. Perfect. So this is that. So this is just for a transform. The way to do it is that you could do this in the spherical coordinates. It's so there's I think there's a 2 pi over volume that d cos theta, and there's r squared dr. And there's e to the I k r cos theta. So you can first then take the integral over cos theta, that gives you a sine function, and the integral over r can be taken by, I think there are a couple of integrations by parts, but all you can use Mathematica, that's going to be free. So this is the answer. So as I was telling you, it's not easy to see it here, but if you let kr go to 0, this goes to 1. If kr goes to infinity, these are oscillatory, but it decays as 1 over kr cubed. So basically, wkr looks like this, basically. It's 1 at the small one, k. Wkr versus k. It's 1 at the small k and large k. Oscillates and becomes 1. So that's exactly what the low-pass filter is. It doesn't affect, so here, it doesn't affect modes that are much longer than the radius of the sphere. But it does affect the modes that are much shorter than the k. If k is much larger than 1 over r, or if the wavelength is much shorter than the size of the sphere, then they don't affect this. And this is intuitively reasonable, right? So what's happening is that you, in this step, you're averaging density within this sphere. So if you have shorter wavelength modes, average that, you don't care about them. If you have long wavelength modes, when you average within this sphere, when you average density within the sphere, those modes are intact. Nothing happens to them. Because this sphere is smaller than the size of the mode. And when you look at the average delta within this sphere, it's really only modes that are longer than the size of the sphere matter. Or that are smaller than the size of a sphere. Don't matter. Okay, good. So this is sigma of r, and that's the formula for W. So that's why it's called a spherical top hat, because it's just a Fourier transform of a sphere. So, what do you think? Everything makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Too much makes sense? Or just enough?
Just enough.
Okay, so let's see. So next step, so let's verify that for, yeah, so the next step is interesting. So So the simplest distribution of particles is if they are uncorrelated, you just randomly sprinkle particles in space. And you expect the distribution to be Poisson, right? So for a Poisson distribution, the average number of particles, of course, within a sphere goes to this volume, the mean density times the volume. And the fluctuations, or relative fluctuations, go as 1 over the square root of the number of particles, right? So of course, since you have a discrete number of particles, you don't always have a fixed number within the volume. It could be fluctuation. So from Poisson distribution, you expect, say, the number of rain, that's another way of putting it, the number of rain droplets that fall into the bucket have a Poisson distribution. Now, so could you verify that if you plug in a constant P, you recover what you expect from Poisson, that sigma of R should go as 1 over square root of volume, or did you manage?
Well, I was looking at it the other way, that for Poisson you would get a constant P, and I couldn't do it mathematically as I didn't get to that point, but I can argue for that case in that part of the definition of Poisson distribution is that the probability of finding a particle at anywhere, any point in time, mm-hmm. is completely independent of any other point, and that's how it's defined, in fact. So that means that the expectation value of the 2-point or the 2-point correlation function, mm-hmm. rather, should, I believe, just be zero, because the 2 points are completely uncoordinated, however far apart they are.
Good. Yes, exactly. That's exactly true. And we can go back to our definition, which is, I guess we never quite wrote it down. But yes, so what I'm saying, because I should be zero everywhere.
Yeah.
Except for where...
except if the points lie on top of each other.
If R is equal to zero.
Why is it zero again?
So maybe you could define psi as the delta function of...
Mm-hmm. But can you repeat your argument for me?
The argument is that the way the Poisson distribution is originally defined is that the probability, like, well, if you take, you know, raindrops falling into a bucket, mm-hmm. at any point in time, there's a chance that the raindrop will fall at some instance. Say you get an average of 1 raindrop per second. In any given second, you might get 0, you might get 1, you might luck out and get 10. Mm-hmm. So the Poisson distribution models that in the limit as you go to time intervals to infinity, like you would expect 1/100th of a raindrop every 1/100th of a second. So it just gets the distribution that is this, but the trick is that the probability of a raindrop at any given instant is independent of another instant, as, you know, they don't see the other ones in the sky. So that's how the distribution is defined.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So when you have this condition that probability at 8 points is uncorrelated, the 2-point correlation function has to be zero.
Yeah, so because these different points are independent of each other, so this should manage everywhere other than where R is equal to zero, where you actually, it's the same point. Of course, the same point is hard to pick itself.
Yeah,
because
if R is not zero,
if R is not zero. So that's exactly the trick here. That so the Fourier transform of a delta function, of course,
is
a constant. Yes, it's a constant. So this is. This is the question. Yes, exactly. This is what you wrote. The Fourier transform of delta function is 1, or the constant, depending on what sits in front of the delta function. So if the psi is a delta function, is 0 everywhere other than that, then this Fourier transform is the constant. So that tells you why it's a constant. That tells you why it's a constant. And what it actually is, so could you derive what the actual number of P is for value of P?
I didn't work through that as I was expecting to need to use the equation
yeah.
given there, but actually, you know, you might be able to do it with just the one from one in that mm-hmm. if you model it as being a density of x
mm-hmm.
times delta r, then take the Fourier transform of that, you could show that P just has to be, and what is it?
But the question is, what is cosine exactly? If you know the mean density of particles in the universe
yeah.
and a Poisson, what should cosine be? Of course, we know it's there, zero everywhere other than at zero, but then what is the actual prefactor of the delta function at r?
Should be the mean density?
It should be related to the mean density.
Our mean density squared?
And just based on dimensional argument, you would expect it to be mean density, right? Because, how many times am I saying this, sorry?
Well, don't we need it to be squared because we've got the expectation value of the product of two densities?
Oh, sorry, you need it to be one over mean density. Because, so the argument we just gave, here, it was that psi is going to be a constant times delta g of r. Psi of r.
Yeah.
Right. So what is the dimension of delta function?
Dimensionless?
No, that's not true. That's not
okay.
true. It's, you know that the, well, here or here, the integral of the delta function is 1.
Yeah.
So this is dimensionless. So the dimension of delta function should cancel the dimension of dgk, right?
So 1 over 1?
Well, so exactly. So it should be 1 over, so in this instance, it should be 1 over k cubed, right? And, well, of course, it depends on what's the argument of delta function. Here, when I'm integrating over x, it should be 1 over x cubed. Here should be 1 over k cubed. So for delta, its dimension is 1 over the dimension of its argument, because when you integrate over the argument, it should give you 1. If it's delta 3, then it's 1 over the dimension of argument q. So this has a dimension of 1 over volume. So just based on dimension of the argument, that tells you that A should be what in terms of density? If you want the psi to be dimensionless, because the psi is dimensionless. It's just
okay, so it should be volume.
It should be volume, or sorry, in terms of density, it should be 1 over density. If you want it, of course, if you assume if you're infinite the space, then the volume of the space should enter. So that, I think I could tell you that this should be just, if based on dimensional argument, and that doesn't tell you everything, it should be something like this. There could be a prefactor here if it's just dimensional argument, so we don't know that yet. Right, but does this make sense? Because density is 1 over volume. Delta 3 is also 1 over volume, so they cancel each other. So the psi becomes dimensionless. But there is a more rigorous way of showing this, and so let's see. There's a more rigorous way of showing this. So if you have infinite number of, so if you look at density of particles, let's see, come on. Well, okay, so I think there are several ways of showing this. If you have just random density or random distribution of particles, delta of x is by definition a sum over, it's a sum over density of individual particles, right? So the density of each particle is just a delta function where that particle is, right? Because, of course, for every individual particle, the density is every zero everywhere except for where it is, where density is infinite, say these are zero size particles. And this is going to be a sum over I, sum over all particles. Right? So, let's see, so this makes sense. And what I want to show is, from I want to start from here and get to here, that psi of r is 1 over the mean density of r. And does this make sense? Just if you have a bunch of particles, it may not work.
You might want to prefactor it with the mass of the particle, but yeah.
Yes. Okay, so that's right. There is a mass factor. Say all of them have the same mass. And yeah, so then this is correct density. Then I have to probably divide by the mean density of the universe, or mean density of particles divided by rho bar, and subtract one. So this makes more sense, right? So this is just rho divided by rho bar minus one. The density at this point is just m times delta function. Make sense? Okay. Now, to find the psi, I need to find delta x plus r. So let's forget about minus ones for now. I think at the end they cancel minus ones. And these different particles are uncorrelated, so I can. Well, let's see. So what am I left with? So I claim that this is what I'm left with. Basically, S squared of density of individual particles. Is this right? Oh, sorry. So there are two terms really. Okay. So I really need more space. Let me write this down for ourselves. Sorry, so that we. So this is going to be m squared, sorry, m over rho bar squared, sum over ij. Sorry, sum over I, now this is my check, times delta 3 x minus x I delta 3 of x plus r minus x I. And these are Dirac delta functions. Now I've ignored all the other terms because so there are cross terms, of course, but if you assume different particles are correlated with each other, those cross terms, I'm claiming that their average vanishes, and it shouldn't be too hard to show that. So you can just investigate that on your own. If you just, so this is the sum over I, of course. But if I average this over xi, so these i's are, of course, random. Xi's are random numbers. So if I average over xi's, then this is roughly, this is actually exactly true. So this is not approximate, but you can think of it as averaging over xi's. And what it gives you is just 1 over volume integral over d3xi. because xi has a random uniform distribution. And is this true? Yes. And the integral over xi, and then the rest, whatever was up there. So this is 1 over density squared. Here, I have 1 over volume. An integral over dgxi is gives me a 1, right? Okay. Just give me delta glr. So what am I doing? So you have you still have the same sigma of I. Okay, so I'm not sure if this is easier than the other way that I had or harder. It's just, but it's really the same. So this is the number divided by volume, so it's number density, so it's just 1 over number density. But let's see what I've done. I have a sum over all the particles here, right? But xi is random for every particle is uncorrelated from particle to particle. Since xi is random, I just average this over xi. I still have the sum over all the particles, but when I average this over xi and then divide by the total volume, then average integral over xi gives me 1. So it says x equal must be equal to xi, get rid of one of these delta functions. And since x should be equal to xi, this gives me these two cancel each other, all I'm left with is delta g of r. And there was a sigma and sum over all particles that I still have. And that's just the total number of particles now. Because none of these depend on I anymore. Nothing else depends on I. This is just the sum over I, which is the number of particles. So this number of particles divided by volume is the number density. One over number density squared. And if I take a Fourier transform of this, it just gives me 1 over ng. So the power spectrum is a constant. That's the argument that Brian had. Its actual value is 1 over ng. You could see it from dimensional analysis, or you could see it just directly here. And I guess what I had asked you to verify was to plug it in here, this formula, and show that if this is 1 over ng, then the delta of r that you would get is just suppose it's 1 over s squared of volume, which is what you expect from Poisson distribution. That the relative uncertainty in the number of particles goes down as 1 over s squared of number of particles in the Poisson distribution. And that's a nice result if I guess there are other ways of deriving this. But this is an intuitive verification of what we did here. That the uncertainty in our particles goes as 1 over square root of volume. So what do you think about this? Do you think it makes sense?
Yeah.
No? Yes.
Almost.
So
it's a bit,
new,
exactly. Mm-hmm. At least for me, I've never seen this stuff before. What's interesting?
I haven't seen this stuff, but you know, I know about distributions and Fourier transforms
that
before,
helps.
And it makes sense.
I'm just thinking. So you said you have to find photometric redshifts, right?
Well, no, I don't work with finding them, except in using software that's already been developed
uh-huh.
to find them. I just use them.
You just use photometric redshifts.
Yes.
So what is the goal then?
The goal is to identify groups of galaxies when we only have, you know, position R index data and
mm-hmm.
photometric redshifts of them.
I see.
Okay, so you don't really have to work with the correlation of galaxies.
No.
No.
We did use that in some points using a friends of friends algorithm. We have used the correlation function, but the way we set that up is we had it, rather than calculating it from theory, we calculated it based on the sample. Mm-hmm. Or what we did is we set up various annuli of possible distances between galaxies and projected on the sky, then looped over the entire sample, checking every pair, and binned them according to which annuli they fell.
So that's calculating a correlation function, all right?
Yeah.
And what did you do with the correlation function?
We used that to give a prior probability for using, you know, Bayesian methods, or Bayesian, for looking at comparing the probability distributions in photometric redshift space, and then so we would combine the two probabilities to give the overall probability that two galaxies were a real pair.
A real pair, okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to fake pairs.
Yeah. Just they're in projection.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually something that's interesting. So that's related to this stuff, because you do expect fake pairs because the galaxies that aren't really correlated, but, well, just random distributions, randomly picked from different distances, say, they have a Poisson distribution because there is no correlation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use this power spectrum of the correlation function to estimate, for example, how many fake pairs you expect to get, because that's really, of course, this is, we established that this is zero for Poisson distribution. But when you're calculating this, you don't really do the averaging, the ensemble average, because this average assumes that you have infinite realizations. But if you only have a finite number of pairs, for example, then although this average is zero, the variance of this quantity is not zero, right? So if I define if I define delta of x times delta of x plus r, this might be on average zero. So this is the probability of pairs being close to each other. Excess probability of finding a pair at the distance r. This on average might be zero for Poisson distribution, but for a finite number of pairs, it wouldn't be zero. It has, if I call this psi tilde, it has some variance. And by that I mean psi tilde squared is not zero, as you would expect. Even if delta is Poisson, this is going to be so let's say this is for, you measure it for different x's. Yeah, well, this is going to be something like delta of x plus r. So even for a finite r, this doesn't manage. This is going to be average of delta x squared. And these are both delta functions. And there are probably some averaging involved, but this is not exactly infinite, because I think there is some smoothing involved. But this is one of the applications that, not be the easiest way of seeing it. But the point is that when you define a correlation function, there is a noise in its measurement. And the noise is the variance of the correlation function. And if you only have Poisson noise, which is, I guess, in what you're considering in your case, because
you have all these pairs from different distances.
Yeah, what we did is we took our sample and compared it to randomly generated, which was kind of Poisson. We had a set number of points, and then we just gave them all random positions, which is roughly for a large number
of
points.
Similar to Poisson.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it's more or less the same as Poisson. So, but you could have done it in principle analytically as well by a calculation like this.
Yeah.
So it's very useful whenever you're working with a discrete set of points, and that is, for example, for galaxies. But that if you're working with Markov background, this may not be the most interesting thing to work at because that Markov background is a continuous map. But for discrete points, galaxies, clusters, things like that, there is always a Poisson noise. So whenever you're calculating things, there is always the cosmological correlation, but on top of that, there is a Poisson noise. And this can become important on larger scales and the smaller scales. So we have half an hour. And so we can do, well, I guess, get start talking about the next problem, right?
Well, the next one is more like I did in April, just like numerical stuff. So
numerical stuff.
Yeah. And I got some plots.
Well, plots are always good,
yeah.
But so it's important. There is a lot of physics actually. So you may think this is all math, but there are hundreds and hundreds and thousands of papers on this, and this at least couple of problems really. So that basically the number of clusters and the power spectrum, shape of the power spectrum. So why don't we get us started with the third, fourth? Whichever it's a third problem, yes. So let me just make a point about, I guess, an introduction to this power spectrum, and then Nina can show us what she gets. So this shape that I gave you, P of K versus K, it's amazing that you can make such precise prediction from, say, inflationary theory. But it's that most of this is, there aren't really that many free parameters that go into the derivation of this. There are a few, but not that many. And it's amazing that just by a few, like a handful of free parameters, you can predict the entire power spectrum that's consistent with all observations, with hundreds and thousands of data points. So the function, it looks like this. It goes as k at the small k values, goes as k to the minus 3, I think actually log k squared divided by k cubed at the small k, at large k. And I think the turnover is somewhere around 100 or 0.01 megaparsec inverse. And people have measured at very, very precise data point measurements, basically all over this. Close to the peak, they don't go far beyond the peak at too larger scales. At smaller scales, though, there are lots of accurate measurements basically in this area, from K 0.01 to 0.1, from galaxy surveys mainly. And so the part that's predicted from inflation is this part, really. This part is generated through basically the fluctuations of barriers in photons in the radiation era. So I'm not going to get into too much detail, but this whole form can be calculated if you look at how perturbations in the universe propagate from the matter era to radiation era, basically. So these perturbations, they're oscillating during the radiation era, essentially. These ones were not oscillating during the radiation era. They were on larger scales, so they were oscillating. And that really is the gist of what's responsible for this shape. But the point I wanted to make is that if you measure this from a real galaxy distribution, this is the cosmological signal you're looking for, but you always have a Poisson noise here, because you have a finite number of galaxies. So what you really measure is this plus a constant. N inverse, NG inverse, number of banks in the inverse. And is that just a Poisson? So whenever you measure the power spectrum from a server, you have this plus the actual cosmological power spectrum. So that's why it's better to have more galaxies, the larger galaxy density. The larger galaxy density, it's easier to see, to differentiate the cosmological part, which is this, from the Poisson part, which is just a random fluctuation of galaxies. So an easy rule of thumb, when you want to see if your data is good enough to measure the galaxy power spectrum, to compare the power spectrum that you want to measure, the cosmological power spectrum, to number density of galaxies inverse. If this is bigger than this, then you can measure the power spectrum well. If this is smaller, then you cannot. And by this shape, you can see that it's always easier to do it around the peak. But for very large case and very small case, it's not easy. So that's the deal. So Mina, do you think you can derive for us this sigma of R? How did you find it?
Sigma of R?
Or whatever you're
A. Well, I can't say what I'm going.
But can you just make it draw by hand a couple of things that you were. So the sigma of M and sigma of R.
Okay.
I think the first step was to find what A is, this normalization,
yeah.
If sigma A is 0.8.
That's not what I got. I was able to, well, what I did is I just integrated the function here, q, for q from 0 to infinity, and I just got normalization of about 43.
To infinity?
Yeah.
You just integrated, is this integrated dgk or dk? Yeah.
That might be it, but what I did is I just took, you know, this function of q, integrated that from 0 to infinity. So that would be normalized.
But was that integral d cubed k that you took, or just dk when you take the integral?
I'm doing it with q, so it was just...
Okay, d cubed q, or I mean, was this a three-dimensional integral or a one-dimensional integral?
Just one-dimensional, so...
Okay, so that's the problem. But this is actually a three-dimensional. This family is dimensionless, but this is a three-dimensional integral, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that might be...
Well, see, my goal here was... Yeah, I was thinking that it had to be... that we had a thinking piece and probability distribution was stuck in my head.
Ah, this P is like this. I see.
Yeah, that's my
guess. Yeah, I have two P's here. I guess I did maybe put them in different symbol. But okay, so let's see what you did. You know.
So you can turn it to like one dimension.
Yes, good.
So that's
what I did. Is that all things? Yeah, but then there are some pre factors, I guess.
Yeah, A was Q. Yeah, there are some prefactors.
Okay, good. So you found that the normalization, that's fine. So then how does sigma of M and sigma of R look like? So, what is the maximum value of R that you go to?
It's almost 1 or 0.9 something on this one.
At what radius?
Oh, the radius is 10 to the power of 4.
Okay.
Nothing squared out.
What?
Was it 1?
I don't know what
I think
that is.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know, it's always good if you have a large range of variation than plot things in logarithmic log log.
Yeah, the other ones I give you logarithmic.
Okay,
this one I just left it like that.
Okay, so that goes up to 1. So that makes sense because, well, I would guess it would go larger than 1 because it's 1 at 8 megaparsec, right? At eight inverse. So it should be larger than 1 at 1 megaparsec. Is that true or?
I'm not sure.
It's not easy to tell.
It's not easy to tell.
Well, yeah, that's why you should have put in log log. But yeah, so this should go to, you normalize it to 0.8 and 8 megaparsec, so that's what it should be. Become larger at the smaller radius. At large radius, at 10 to the 4 megaparsec, it should be around 10 to the minus 5. Do you know what it is, or you cannot tell? No, you cannot tell.
No.
Okay, maybe the other one, you can tell. Well, sigma of n, is that what you want?
Okay.
That's too small.
That's too small. Yeah.
That's too small.
Yeah, maybe it's something like that.
Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, that should be large number, I think. I don't know, 20 or something, or maybe, yeah, because, so what is the character, what is the mass associated with 8 megaparsec? Because, yes, the relation, what is the relation between how you convert from mass to radius?
Yeah. Oh, maybe my density is wrong, because...
So what is the density?
What, I got density like 10 to the power of 10. I assume for this.
That's reasonable. That's reasonable density.
Okay.
So density is around 10 to the, I think it's 3 times 10 to the 10 solar mass per megaparsec cubed.
Okay, it's like something like that.
And then for 8 megaparsec, it's, so the volume, what is for 8 megaparsec? The volume is something like 1,000 megaparsec cubed. So the mass is like 10 to the 13 solar mass.
Mm-hmm.
So if sigma of 8 megaparsec, is that sigma at 10 to the 13 solar mass? And that should be 0.8.
0.8, yeah.
So then it would be larger than the smaller radius.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm thinking, so I mean, this normalization should be, if you did the normalization right, then you should get that.
I'm not sure.
So does this know now what the procedure is?
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's basically, there are some prefactors, but it's just the W squared times P of K, which is the formula that's given there. We normalize it so that sigma at 8 megaparsec should be 0.8.
Sigma. I didn't do that, that's why.
You didn't do that?
I didn't normalize
that. So how did we get 8?
Yeah, I did that.
Okay, so that's the way you get 8, there's no other way.
Okay.
So I don't
know. Okay. It might be
Maple. It's all Maple's fault.
It's not my fault, it's Maple's fault.
Maple's fault, yeah. Okay.
And then f of m is something the same, but it goes to 0.9.
But you can use that sigma of m if you have it right to calculate the number of galaxies or number of clusters. Well, okay, so, well, you're gonna get, hopefully you're gonna get this right next time then. I don't know, it's, yeah, it shouldn't be too difficult, so let's see. What should we do? We have next hour, there's this, and there's basically a press checker formula, how many crosses you get if you have sigma on them. So this is a very straightforward thing to do. To find sigma of m, you should just plug into that formula that we have up there. And then you normalize it at the edge inverse of the parsec. So that shouldn't be too difficult. Now, what's the next part is actually really interesting physics, but it has to do with what you actually observe. There's a number of clusters in the universe, how many clusters you see. And that is related to this sigma of n, because basically the more fluctuations there are in the universe, the more clusters you form. So the larger sigma of n, sigma of m is larger than when you form a lot of clusters. If sigma of m is much smaller than that one, means that at that mass fluctuations are small, so they don't collapse to form a structure. So that we can discuss in the next hour. I just wanted to ask you, did any of you get to look at the last problem set?
No.
How about you?
A little bit.
Okay. The important part, which is related to this problem, is this linear collapse threshold, if you could get it. We can discuss it in the next hour as well. Basically, everything we're doing here is the linear density field before nonlinear structures form. But then there is this simple prescription that when linear density becomes larger than 1.7, then whatever does that collapses into form a halo. So wherever the density becomes larger than 1.7, the nonlinear density actually becomes infinite. So you collapse to form a realized halo, and that's the key assumption in the calculation of the number of clusters in the universe. This press checker formula. Okay, so I guess next, so we can break for now. Next hour from 1 to 2, we can discuss basically the press checker derivation and the spread of problems. So this is already related to your research, isn't it? Have you heard of press checker before?
No.
No. Number of clusters, that's how people do cosmology. Count how many clusters there are and say too much or too few. Well, good, thank you. Yeah, everybody else missed a lot. This is a lot of modern cosmology used writing papers. Okay, so see you. Have fun.
Your printout.
Oh.